North Korea detains an American soldier who fled over its heavily armed border from South Korea.
What is certain is that he's going to be subjected to very harsh interrogation. There will be psychological pressure and there will be physical violence.
Plus, hoping to harness the good AI can do and mitigate the dangers, the UN Security Council holds its first meeting on artificial intelligence.
The biggest AI-induced transformations are still to come. Their scale is impossible for us to comprehend fully. AI will fundamentally alter every aspect of human life.
And South Africans celebrate Nelson Mandela's birthday. Today is Wednesday, July 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. U.S. officials say an American soldier who had served nearly 2 months in a South Korean prison fled across the heavily armed border into North Korea Tuesday, becoming the first American detained in the North in nearly 5 years. VOA's Liam Scott asked Greg Scarlato, executive director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea, what this could mean for the 23-year-old U.S. service member.
It comes down to a few basic issues. This young man will be interrogated by the North Koreans. The first thing they'll want to find out is whether he's indeed a deserter and a defector, or whether he was sent to North Korea on a mission. Number two, although he's very young, of course, it seems that he was facing some disciplinary action. He was under arrest and then he was escorted to the airport. He managed to escape the secure area. He had cleared security, get on a tour. Although he's probably very young and knows very little, they will try very hard to extract whatever information they can extract. Number three, they will try to get him to cooperate with the North Korean authorities. What is certain is that he's going to be subjected to very harsh interrogation. There will be psychological pressure and there will be physical violence. And yes, we do remember Otto Warmbier. Of course, Otto's circumstances were very different. Otto was there on a tour and supposedly as a tourist who paid to visit North Korea, he was supposed to be protected. His life was supposed to be protected. He was arrested and imprisoned for something that would have amounted to a frat prank, basically, anywhere else in the world, not in North Korea. Probably, most likely, he was tortured, put into a vegetative state, eventually sent back home. He passed away 1 week later. What we hear from North Korean escapees, and we know a lot of them, I know a lot of them, is that if you are an American, regardless of why you are inside North Korea, you may be a tourist, you may be a professor, you may be a student, you may be a missionary, especially if you are a member of the U.S. Armed Forces, you will be suspected of being a U.S. spy. Actually, they will be certain that you are a U.S. spy and you'll be treated accordingly. So I do fear for his safety. You know, as one running a human rights organization, I'm very worried about a fellow American who made a terrible decision.
Could this potentially be a propaganda coup for the North Korean government? Could they present it as, look, this American hates America so much he wanted to come to North Korea?
It depends on his motives. It depends on whether he collaborates with the North Korean authorities. Based on what we know, and the information is very limited as of now, he seems to have been a disgruntled member of the U.S. Armed Forces. That is not outside the realm of possibility. If he's there on his own free will and he actually wants to collaborate with the North Koreans, he will do that. This will be employed as a propaganda tool, but not before he undergoes very harsh investigation and interrogation. How will this play out, we don't know. The best we can do is provide an educated guess based on history, and based on history, I think that he will not be returned to the United States.
Greg Scarlato, executive director on the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. Meanwhile, North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles into its eastern sea early Wednesday in what appeared to be a statement of defiance as the U.S. deployed a nuclear-armed submarine to South Korea for the first time in decades. Israel's moderate ceremonial leader, President Isaac Herzog, met with President Joe Biden at the White House Tuesday, where the two covered a range of issues, including Russia's increased ties with Iran and the Biden administration's concerns over moves by Israel's conservative prime minister toward judicial reform and increased settlements in the West Bank. Tens of thousands of protesters across Israel blocked roads, snarled traffic, and clashed with police after calling a national day of resistance to protest the Israeli government's planned judicial overhaul. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Tens of thousands of Israelis opposed to the Israeli government's plan to overhaul the judicial system and take power away from the Supreme Court took to the streets for a National Day of Resistance Tuesday. They blocked roads and snarled traffic all over the country. A protester in central Israel was seriously injured in a hit and run, although the police said it might have been a traffic accident. The demonstrators called the Day of Resistance after the right-wing government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu moved ahead with the first piece of legislation that would take power away from the Supreme Court and give it to the government. Under one proposed change, Israel's parliament, the Knesset, would be able to overrule Supreme Court decisions with a simple majority. The legislation had been on hold for several months, but this week the government moved ahead and said it wants to pass it before the Knesset starts a recess at the end of the month. The protests have been going on for 7 months since Netanyahu first announced the reform. But now a growing number of Israeli army reservists, including thousands of pilots, cyber warfare experts, intelligence operatives, and elite combat soldiers, say they will no longer report for reserve duty if the legislation goes through. Israel is a small country, and if they follow through on their threat, it could affect Israel's combat readiness at a time when it is facing threats from Hezbollah in the north, Hamas in Gaza, and Israel's biggest strategic threat, Iran. Admiral Eliezer Marom, the former head of Israel's Navy, told the Israeli TV channel I-24 News that these reservists are making a mistake.
I couldn't condemn them. I think they are doing a mistake. Some of them are my colleagues, some of them are my commanders, some of them are my subordinates. And I know all of them, and I think that they are doing a mistake. The reason they are doing mistakes is because that the IDF is the center of the Israeli consensus. And this is the most important part in the military of Israel, in the defense of Israel, in protecting the sovereignty of Israel.
He says the move will harm the consensus in Israeli society around the role of the army. The protests come as Israel's President Isaac Herzog travels to Washington to meet President Joe Biden and address a joint session of Congress. President Biden has expressed his strong reservations about the judicial overhaul. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump said Tuesday he has been told by special counsel Jack Smith that he is a target of a federal grand jury investigation into whether he illegally tried to upend his 2020 re-election loss to Democrat Joe Biden. Associated Press correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The ex-president says in a social media post he received a target letter Sunday night. Such a letter can precede an indictment. Trump also received one before being charged last month in the classified documents probe. The Office of Special Counsel Jack Smith, who is leading the Justice Department investigation, declined comment. Prosecutors have cast a broad net in their probe of attempts by Trump and his allies to block the transfer of power after he lost the 2020 vote. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The United Nations Security Council held a historic first meeting on artificial intelligence on Tuesday, where China said the technology should not become a runaway horse, and the U.S. warned against its use to censor or repress people. British Foreign Secretary James Cleverly chaired the meeting under Britain's July presidency of the body.
The biggest AI-induced transformations are still to come. Their scale is impossible for us to comprehend fully, but the gains to humanity will surely be immense. AI will fundamentally alter every aspect of human life. Groundbreaking discoveries in medicine may be just around the corner. The productivity boosts to our economies may be vast, and AI may help us adapt to climate change, beat corruption, revolutionized education, and deliver the sustainable development goals.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres backed calls by some states for the creation of a new UN body to support collective efforts to support countries to maximize the benefits of AI for good and mitigate the existing and potential risks.
AI models can help people to harm themselves and each other at massive scale. Let's be clear. The malicious use of AI systems for terrorist, criminal, or state purposes could cause horrific levels of death and destruction, widespread trauma, and deep psychological damage on an unimaginable scale.
Artificial intelligence's potential to transform economies and impact copyrighted material and even elections was a topic of conversation at the annual TED conference held recently in Vancouver. Craig McCullough has the story.
In a world where students' term papers can now be written by artificial intelligence, paintings can be drawn by merely uttering words, and an AI-generated version of your favorite celebrity can appear on screen, the impact of this new technology is starting to be felt in societies and sparking both wonderment and concern. While artificial intelligence has yet to become pervasive in everyday life, the rumblings of what could be looming economic earthquake are growing stronger. Gary Marcus is a professor emeritus of psychology and neuroscience at New York University, who helped ride-sharing company Uber adopt the rapidly developing technology. An author and host of the podcast Humans vs. Machines, Marcus says AI's economic impact is limited for now, although some jobs have already been threatened by the technology. Marcus says jobs that require manual labor will be safe for now.
We're not going to see blue-collar jobs replaced, I think, as quickly as some people had talked about. So we still don't have driverless cars, even though people have talked about that for years. Anybody that does something with their hands is probably safe right now because we don't really know how to make robots that sophisticated when it comes to dealing with the real world.
Another TED speaker, Sal Khan, is the founder of Kamingo, an artificial intelligence-powered software designed to help educate children. He is optimistic about AI's potential economic impact as a driver of wealth creation.
Will it cause mass dislocations in the job market? I actually don't know the answer to that. It will create more wealth, more productivity.
The legal profession could be boosted by AI if the technology prompts litigation. Copyright attorneys could especially benefit. Tom Graham and his company, Metaphysic AI, artificially recreate famous actors and athletes so they do not need to be physically be in front of a camera or microphone in order to appear in films, TV shows, or commercials. His company is behind the popular fake videos of actor Tom Cruise that have gone viral on social media. He says the legal system will play a role in protecting people from being recreated without their permission. Graham, who has a law degree from Harvard University, has applied to the U.S. Copyright Office to register the real-life version of himself.
We did that because you're looking for legal institutions that exist today that could give you some kind of protection or remedy.
Marcus is urging the formation of an international organization to oversee and monitor artificial intelligence.
I've been calling for an international agency for AI. That's what my TED talk was about, in fact. And I think the need for that to get a lot of smart people together from the companies, from the government, but also scientists, philosophers, ethicists. I think it's really important that we as a globe think all these things through and don't just leave it to like 190 governments doing whatever random thing they do without really understanding the science.
The popular AI website ChatGPT has gained widespread attention in recent months, but is not yet a moneymaker. Its parent company, OpenAI, lost more than $540 million in 2022. Craig McCulloch for VOA News, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Here are some of the other stories we are following from around the world. Belarusian authorities have detained a prominent journalist who used to work for outlets including Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. A senior Pakistani envoy travels to Afghanistan on Wednesday for bilateral talks with Taliban leaders amid growing allegations Afghan-based fugitive militants have stepped up cross-border terrorist attacks in Pakistan. Tunisia has overtaken Libya as the top embarkation point for African migrants heading to Europe, starting in Italy. Tunisia's leaders recently signed a deal with the EU to work together to reduce migrant flows, but challenges persist. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists using data from the European Space Agency's CHEOPS mission learn more about an extremely hot and bright Neptune-sized exoplanet. The planet is called LTT-9779b. It's situated about 2.5 million kilometers from its host star, completes one solar orbit in just 19 hours, and is surrounded by metallic mirror-like clouds, making it the shiniest exoplanet found so far. CHEOPS shows the exoplanet reflects 80% of its star's light. By comparison, Earth reflects about 30% of the sun's light, Venus about 75%, but Enceladus, a moon of Saturn, reflects 90% of the light it gets from the sun. LTT-9779b was first discovered in 2020 by NASA's TESS Space Telescope. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Russia said Tuesday it carried out attacks on Odessa and Mykolaiv along Ukraine's Black Sea coast in retaliation for an attack Monday by Ukraine that knocked out its road bridge to the occupied Crimean Peninsula. Russian strikes on Ukrainian ports came a day after Moscow pulled out of a UN-backed deal to allow safe passage for Kyiv to export grain. Climate change and a newly formed El Nino combined to continue shattering heat records worldwide. During a visit to Beijing, U.S. climate envoy John Kerry told China's top diplomat on Tuesday that he hopes addressing the threat of climate change can be a path of cooperation between the two countries. Meanwhile, wildfires outside Athens, Greece, have forced thousands to flee seaside resorts, closed highways, and gutted vacation homes, with high winds pushing flames through hillside scrub and pine forests parched by days of extreme heat. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Authorities have issued evacuation orders for at least six seaside communities as two major wildfires edge closer to summer resort towns, fanned by wind gusts hitting 45 mph. Chris Field, a former co-chair of a 2013 UN climate report and at Stanford University, says what's important about these heat events especially is that they really do impact quality of life.
I think we're really struggling to get a handle on the overall consequences for public health, but especially when you've got a heat event.
Greece Fire Service employee Yanis Artopios says the strong and changeable winds are slowing the firefighting effort. The conditions, he says, are changing constantly, and this has to be matched by our response. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Every year on July 18th, Nelson Mandela's birthday, the South African government calls on citizens to honor the global icon's legacy by doing good deeds. But almost 10 years after the anti-apartheid legend's death, with South Africa suffering record levels of unemployment, widespread blackouts, and corruption scandals, many say the current government is itself failing to honor Mandela. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Mandela, who spent 27 years in prison in his fight against racist white minority rule, is a hero to many in South Africa and across the world. After he became the country's first democratically elected president in 1994, there was a great sense of hope for South Africa under his leadership of the African National Congress Party, or ANC. But his successors, all from the ANC, have had mixed reviews, with one, former President Jacob Zuma, facing trial on multiple counts of corruption. Many critics say the once storied Liberation Party has become bloated, corrupt, and inept, though others argue the brutal legacy of the apartheid system has made it hard to turn the country around. What ordinary South Africans who spoke to VOA on the streets of Johannesburg did agree on this Mandela Day, however, was that the man many refer to as Tata, or father, is sorely missed. Isaac Rabutapi, a security guard, remembered the day in 1990 when he was a young child and Mandela was released from prison.
We were so happy in Soweto, saving children. We couldn't sleep even in that day because we were so happy, like he was out of a jail. We do remember so many things about him. Actually, we miss him.
Rabutapi says the country's current leaders haven't lived up to Mandela's huge legacy.
I'm very disappointed. I think that I would be very crying to see, like, South Africa is collapsing. Really is collapsing through about water, load shedding, electricity, those stuff, the shortage of food, you know.
Agnes Mashole, who owns a beauty salon, also remembers the celebrations when Mandela and the ANC won the first election after apartheid. But like Rabutapi, she laments the widespread power failures known here as load shedding, which have badly affected Africa's most developed economy, and expresses disappointment with the current government.
They failed. They, like, really failed. I wish we could just wake up Mandela and fix everything.
Asanda Nakosheng, an independent political analyst, told VOA South Africa was a complex country because of its history.
Yes, corruption does leave a stain in the ANC, and it is a difficult issue to deal with, and it is disappointing for South Africans considering the legacy of Mandela. But there is a lot that the ANC has done for South Africa and continues to do for South Africa, particularly Black South Africans.
To mark Mandela Day, President Cyril Ramaphosa inaugurated two new statues of the revered statesman and made a speech about following in his footsteps. However, if the ANC doesn't fix some of the problems plaguing the country, it may no longer be able to retain power simply by trading on Mandela's legacy. South Africa holds elections next year, and recent polls show the ANC might lose its parliamentary majority for the first time since coming to power. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And scientists at the University of California, Los Angeles have come up with a device that may one day be an alternative to chemotherapy for treating cancer. Jenia DeLo has the story.
When she was pursuing her education, bioengineer Negin Majidi became convinced that advances in immunotherapy would one day allow doctors to treat cancer effectively.
You could actually recruit body's immune cells and work on body's natural capability of being able to clear the tumor in order to get rid of the cancer cells. So that was super exciting for me.
Iranian-born Majidi and her bioengineer husband, Mahdi Hassani, are now part of an interdisciplinary team of medical and engineering researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles. The group has developed SymphNode, a tiny biodegradable sponge-like device about the size of a pencil eraser. Made of a polymer called alginate, the device is implanted or injected into a tumor. From there, it releases a drug that generates a better immune response than the body can do on its own, according to the researchers. The idea, says UCLA immunology professor Manish Butt, who mentored Majidi during her research, is to block the regulatory T cells that police cancer-fighting killer T cells.
This really opens up an avenue for having the immune system attack all kinds of cancers, not just breast cancers, but every kind of solid tumor.
SymphNode has been tested on mice with breast cancer, showing tumors shrinking in 80% of mice and preventing the spread of cancer in 100% of them. The researchers hope to launch clinical trials in 2024. Jenia DeLo for VOA News, Los Angeles.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than any other country, China pressures and attempts to control overseas populations of Chinese and members of exile minority communities. According to Freedom House, a nonprofit group that advocates on issues of democracy, political freedom, and human rights. The extensive scope of China's transnational repression is a result of a broad and ever-expanding definition of who should be subject to extraterritorial control by the Chinese Communist Party. On July 3rd, Hong Kong police issued wanted notices for 8 former pro-democracy activists currently living in the United States, Australia, Britain, and Canada, accusing them of various serious offenses under Hong Kong's draconian Beijing-imposed national security law. They include former pro-democracy lawmakers Nathan Law, Ted Huey, and Dennis Kwok, lawyer Kevin Yam, and activists Finn Lau, Anna Kwok, Elmer Yuen, and Christopher Mung. The wanted notices accuse each of the 8 activists of numerous security offenses including subversion, collusion with foreign governments, terrorist activities, incitement to secession, and of allegedly urging Western nations to impose sanctions against Hong Kong officials. The notices include the offer of a reward of 1 million Hong Kong dollars, equivalent to nearly $128,000, for information leading to the arrest of each of the 8. The United States condemns the Hong Kong police force's issuance of an international bounty for information leading to the arrest of 8 pro-democracy activists who no longer live in Hong Kong, said State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller in a written statement. The extraterritorial application of the Beijing-imposed national security law is a dangerous precedent that threatens the human rights and fundamental freedoms of people all over the world, he said. We call on the Hong Kong government to immediately withdraw this bounty, respect other countries' sovereignty, and stop the international assertion of the national security law imposed by Beijing, said spokesperson Matthews. We will continue to oppose the PRC's transnational repression efforts, which undermine human rights. We support individuals' rights to freedoms of expression and peaceful assembly.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.